This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Despite massive campaigning in the state of New York leading up to Tuesday's primary, Brooklyn native Bernie Sanders lost to his rival Hillary Clinton by 42% to 58%. It has been the first time in a long time that New York's primary mattered so much in the race for the presidential nomination. Several controversies emerged in the weeks and days before the primary about voters being unable to cast ballots. In particular, those voters who might have wanted to change their party affiliation to vote in New York's closed primary would have had to have done so last October. The Sanders campaign has also accused the New York Board of Elections of stripping 125,000 voters from the rolls, including in Brooklyn, where he commanded major support. Arun Gupta is our news correspondent. He's an investigative journalist who has written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, and Salon. He writes regularly at Telesur English, and he's the editor of The Independent. He was a founding editor of the Occupy Wall Street Journal. Hi, Arun.
Hi, Sonali. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, first, let's talk about the fact that media are characterizing this as a massive loss for Bernie Sanders, but only some are pointing out that Sanders would have won a large majority of independent voters had those voters been allowed to vote. Do you think that that was a big enough factor that it might have changed the results on Tuesday?
It may have changed the results, but I would also point out that unfortunately, the way the electoral process works, we're fed a myth in this country about democracy, one person, one vote, everyone's voice counts. The two-party primary system is a private corporate affair. The Democrat and Republican parties are corporations. They set the rules. They decide who votes. They decide how the votes are counted. And obviously, this completely overlaps with public legitimacy and the public electoral process. But we have essentially a privatized election system, so they can say, like, hey, you're not allowed to vote unless
right, I mean,
you're a member of the
state
party, and unless you registered 6 months ago. And they can also put in all these Byzantine and arcane rules for direction.
Right, so state by state, the parties can make up rules. For example, in California, where I am, the Democratic Party in California decided to allow people who have registered with other parties to vote Democratic if they want in the primary. New York simply decided not to. Had New York adopted the rules that California's state party ruled, adopted, then we might have had a very different sort of a result on Tuesday, right?
Sure, but the reason I'm saying we have to think of them in corporations as nations is because they are, and because asking them to do that is like, say, asking ExxonMobil to stop drilling for oil. The Democratic Party's power rests on it being able to define the rules and define the process. So we have these scenarios where people go to the voting booth and they find, even though this election is now a year old, they find they did not even vote for the candidate. They voted for delegates, and those delegates go to a county convention where they pick delegates who go to a state convention. And those delegates at the state convention then pick delegates who go to the national convention. So there are all these layers meant to subvert the popular process. And we know this at the presidential level. When you're casting a ballot for someone, you're not casting it for them directly. It's all about the electoral votes. So those populous states often are completely irrelevant, like New York, Texas, and California.
Hmm. And what happened to the 125,000 people who were apparently removed from the voter rolls? The Board of Elections, apparently between November of last year and this past month, lost, you know, whole buildings of voters. Even Mayor Bill de Blasio talked about this, and then the Sanders campaign has gotten really upset because apparently many voters from Brooklyn, where he commanded strong support, just were missing from the rolls.
That's true, It does look suspicious, but you know, one thing I've learned from investigative reporting is there's a lot of just plain sloppiness and incompetence out there. That doesn't mean there was anything sinister. At the same time, many parts of Brooklyn did, most of Brooklyn went for Hillary Clinton. She won the African American vote nearly 3-1. She had about a 20% advantage in the Latino vote, and Brooklyn is heavily African American and Latino. 60% of Democratic Party primary voters in New York State were women, and she also had a big advantage among women. So maybe there was something sinister, but that would not have changed the overall outcome.
Right. I mean, if there was something sinister, it's not obvious that the Clinton campaign had anything to do with it, or if there was just something, you know, massively negligent, it would possibly be resting at the feet of the Board of Elections rather than any one campaign or another. Incidentally, Rosa Clemente, who ran for president, she actually ran for vice president in 2008, she posted on Facebook, "I'm one of the 27% of New Yorkers who can't vote today because the system is a duopoly. End the two-party system." She was extremely upset about the fact that she and many other New Yorkers simply couldn't cast votes because of these arcane voting rules. What do you make of her comment?
I think that is very much a problem. It's going to take a new movement, I think, outside of electoral politics to force these changes. You know, the last week there were just these two campaigns in Washington called Democracy Spring and Democracy Awakening, bringing thousands of activists to lobby Congress around issues of getting money out of politics. The problem with it, and what I'm suggesting this approach is, you cannot appeal to the people whose power rests on a corrupt system to change that corrupt system. So we need extra systemic movements. And so, yes, Rosa is absolutely correct that we have a corrupt duopoly, but the change is not going to come primarily through the electoral process. It first has to happen in the streets.
And in fact, there have been more and more calls for Bernie Sanders for the campaign, rather, that he has generated and the mobilizations that his campaigns has inspired to really become a movement on its own that pressures the two-party system from the outside. And I'm not sure how much impact that is having on Sanders himself or his campaign directly, but are those calls something that you support?
Certainly, I do. Bill Fletcher wrote recently, the longtime African-American and labor activist, wrote of a meeting he had with Sanders, where he asked Senator Sanders to convene a convention to bring together progressive elements to discuss electoral strategy. And Bernie Sanders declined. Some of your listeners may know, as you do, Sonali, I've been very critical of the Sanders campaign, not Bernie Sanders himself or his stances, which I think are great, but I think he's been playing a sheepdog role of herding people into the Democratic Party. And I think people have to stop looking to messiahs. You know, I think the Eugene Debs line is right about this. If I can lead you into the promised land, someone can lead you out of it. And so Bernie Sanders, even though he's been now campaigning a year, has shown no sign that he's going to do anything in terms of helping independent movement building. And in fact, why should he? That's not his concern. He's not a movement leader. He's running for president. So this energy has to come from people themselves, and it's long overdue, I think, for Sanders supporters to start organizing outside of electoral politics.
Arun, do you think that between now and November, one can build a movement? Because first of all, that's a very short timeline. And then in the short term, is it really hopeless to try to put one's faith in the Sanders campaign? Because there are still a lot of people who want to be able to point out and say, the delegate counts are not in the bag, that the media is inflating Clinton's delegate lead over Sanders, and that if only they would give Sanders better media coverage, which are, those are valid concerns, that that you know might not feed so much into the Clinton campaign. Is it just hopeless to have those concerns at this point?
Well, perfectly fine to have the concerns, but to be complaining about media coverage, you can do that till the sun goes cold. You know, your listeners can look at the stuff. I pointed this out a year ago. Hillary Clinton would have the Democratic Party apparatus. She would have the corporate media. She would have the labor unions. She would have traditional institutions, liberal institutions like the NAACP, and now behind her. This is the deep state. And you're not going to win in a rigged contest. Now, Bernie Sanders has done better than anyone expected, including Bernie Sanders, who in a New York Times article a few weeks ago essentially admitted they were just originally running a protest campaign. But it doesn't change the fact that the system is heavily weighted towards the pro-war, pro-Wall Street candidate. And Clinton is that to a T. And at this point, while it's theoretically possible for Bernie Sanders to win, historically it's almost impossible. And the final thing I would point out, we now have these left insurgent candidacies going back to 1948 when Henry Wallace ran as a Progressive People's Party against Harry Truman. That's 17 elections, and the Democratic Party and the national election is littered with the carcasses of these failed left insurgencies. You can't keep doing the same thing time and again and expect a different outcome. My feeling is do independent movement building, do elections at the local level, and then when you've built real power, then you can start to think about like doing elections at the national level. But I think this has just been a great diversion, and unfortunately, there's very little to show for it. I've been trying to find any independent organizing, and it's almost none that's come out of the Sanders campaign.
Now, Arun, just looking, though, at New York's voting patterns, you're a New Yorker, and in the lead-up to the primary election, many were talking about New York, first of all, not usually having the chance to influence the elections at this level in the past, but also that New Yorkers would be different from the rest of the nation. In the end, Trump and Clinton prevailed, and I'm wondering if that is, you know, what that means about New York as a whole. I'm wondering if that means that New York was, New York isn't that different from the rest of the country in terms of their political leanings.
Well, you have to, you know, yes, that's true. I think that's part of it. But at the same time, Trump is from New York. He's been on the front pages of New York tabloids for 30 years now. So he's this kind of like larger than life character who has captivated many people. And you also have this phenomena when you have one state that leans heavily one way or another. So New York is a Democratic state, the Republicans are much smaller in numbers, so they tend to go more for the fringe candidate. That's why Bernie Sanders has racked up all these wins in these plain states that the Democrats can never compete in. As for Hillary Clinton, she's a carpetbagger, but you know, her and Bill Clinton have pretty much been in New York since 2000, and they are, joined cheek by jowl to the New York media, which is the center of the national media. So they have a lot of access, a lot of favorable coverage, a lot of power relations that they can exploit. But at the same time, there's also the party machinery that the Clinton was able to exploit. New York has a lot of unions. The unions have gone heavily for Hillary Clinton. African Americans went nearly three. So they have a lot of advantages. It was always going to be an uphill climb for Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And going forward, it's virtually impossible for all intents and purposes for him to get the nomination.
So let's talk a little bit about Trump, since you brought him up. Apparently, the only county that Trump lost in the state of New York was New York County, which encompasses all of Manhattan. Should that be surprising?
Sorry, what about New York County?
That was the only county in the entire state that Trump actually lost, and John Kasich won.
Well, you know, these are old numbers, but I know in the 1990s, Democrats outnumbered Republicans in Manhattan 10 to 1. Like I mentioned, you're dealing with a very small Republican base, specifically in Manhattan. And then on top of that, you know, Kasich would appeal much more to the kind of you know, I don't want to say moderate because the guy has some pretty reactionary issues, but he's been able to sell himself as a moderate Republican because he's not as crazy as Trump or Cruz. So he's kind of the fallback for the professional upper class Republicans, you know, what used to be known as the Rockefeller Republicans, the liberal Republicans in the Northeast. You know, but I wouldn't make too much of it because, you know, the average, I was just looking at this, the average annual wage in Manhattan, this is the average, is $148,000 a year.
Wow.
So the amount of wealth here is absolutely phenomenal. And if you're a Republican in Manhattan, good chance you're making a lot of money. And you just want someone who's going to protect your class interests without creating all sorts of chaos like Trump or Cruz.
Now, Arun, because of his win in the state overall, Trump apparently hauled in about 90 delegates. New York was considered for Republicans a winner take almost all. This now apparently means, at least according to news reports, that Trump has a clearer shot at securing the critical 1,237 delegates he needs to win the nomination outright, meaning that a contested nomination process in Cleveland, which is what establishment Republicans were hoping for, might actually be less likely. Is that true?
That may be true, but a lot of this, again, depends upon the arcane rules, because we're seeing in states that Trump won, Cruz is outmaneuvering him, and so I think it was in Wyoming and maybe Colorado where Cruz walked away with the delegates, even though Trump won those states. So they're trying basically to put everything into play, the Republican Party establishment, to deny Trump the nomination. But at the same time, we also have this instance of the establishment despises Cruz as well. So they're not really rallying around him either. I think what's really going on at this point is the Republicans may be giving up on the presidency, and they're just hoping to shore up their to retain power in Congress and at the state level, because the Republicans very much are still calling the shots. The fact that they control both houses of Congress, they have 31 governorships, and they have three times as many state legislatures as the Democrats. So they are still causing a lot of destruction, chaos, and breeding a lot of hatred, even if they can't win the presidency.
Well, Arun, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and I'm sure we'll have you back on in the future again. Thank you.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest is Arun Gupta. He is a news correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. He's an investigative journalist who's written in a number of outlets, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, and Salon. He writes regularly at Telesur English and is the editor of The Independent and was a founding editor of the Occupy Wall Street Journal. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.